Hello, everybody. Welcome back again to another episode. It's good to have you all here. Hopefully, you shall enjoy today's listen. As I allude to at the beginning of this episode, it was a pretty last-minute recording. I had a message from Scott, today's guest, wanting to do another episode because he was bringing out, I don't know, a documentary, little podcast, YouTube video about the risks of the Wim Hof method. And as much about the shit show that is in a fire, I guess, the company behind the Wim Hof method and how people are dying because of it. And whilst there's many people who are throwing their arms up and getting angry at Scott because he's saying this, and he was the original guy who really brought Wim Hof to the masses. What Scott's got to say is actually really important because he's not, unlike me, denigrating the method. I'm personally not one for hyperventilating. Maybe it suits you, but yeah, that's a whole nother story. He still practices the Wim Hof method, but the way in which it's being pushed and the business side of it, I think he's having a big issue with. And it's because of it, people have been dying. So he has been getting his investigative journalist hat on and trying to do some work to hopefully save some people's lives if they watch this and see the risks that are there. I'm not going to go into any more. I shall let you hear Scott talk about it. I do highly recommend you go and watch his video, which is a be up on YouTube, unless Anum, which is Wim Hof's son, manages to get it taken down. But as Scott says at the end, if you check out his website, he's got a list of everywhere you can watch it. So you'll definitely be able to see it, whether it be over on Rumble, on YouTube. There's a little clip of it up on Instagram you can go and see. Definitely check it out. It's fascinating and I'd say a very, very much needed watch. So go check it out. Have a great day. Enjoy the listen. And if you've got any thoughts about it, leave me a comment. Go to Apple. Leave me a comment there. Send me a message. Leave me a comment on Instagram, whatever it might be. Make sure you do please like, subscribe, rate, review, all of that normal jazz, because that's the only way that podcasts get bigger. Please do also, as I say, share it around with your friends. If you've got someone who is interested in the Wim Hof method, maybe send this to them and see what they think. Anyway, on with the episode. Have a great day, and I'll catch you all very soon. Right, welcome back everybody to another episode. This one's like a last minute like recording because Scott, who you all know from previous episode, dropped me a line and wanted to do another chat. So we are chucking this in at 9:30 at night because I do not want to miss this chat. It's going to be a cracking one. All right, Scott, how are we?
I'm good, man. Yeah, it's been a wild 4 months, but I'm here, I'm standing.
Yeah, man. You've definitely I mean you're I follow about three accounts on YouTube and you're one of them
Oh.
and yeah, let's just say it's all been getting a bit feisty and we're definitely going to drop into some of these like some of the bits and pieces as to what I mean by feisty, but what's been going on then? Because the last time I spoke to you, we chatted a lot about Wim Hof and what doesn't kill us
Yeah.
type stuff. We also chatted a little bit about some of your other books, which are obviously all behind you. And definitely people go and check them out because, yeah, Scott's also just done a podcast. I'm going to drop that in now, which is also really good. I've literally done half of it in the last 2 days. So
Oh,
check that
nice.
out too.
You're my listener.
Oh, yeah, that's me. So I guess. Yeah, why are we doing this chat today then? Because obviously we spoke, we discussed a whole bunch of your works, but you got
Yeah.
in touch and wanted to do another chat.
So the thing is, so for the last 10 years, I've been Wim Hof's like number one evangelist in the world. Like, wrote two books about him. I practice his method, been doing it for 10 years straight. And I love it. It freaking works. It is awesome. And I'm into it. But there is a problem that we need to talk about. And I think it's really, really serious. And I've been ringing alarm bells for about 6 months, sort of like casually. And, you know, noting that Wim has been getting, I think I would say, increasingly erratic and unreliable. And his teachings have moved over into the area of danger. In particular, I asked a question, I think in February, I was like, how many people have died doing the method? And I'd heard about some people drowning over the years, you know, people, you know, doing the breath work in the water and passing out, which we all know is a possibility, because since Wim Hof method is, you know, centers around hyperventilation,
yeah,
and then breath retention. And from a certain perspective, it seems like, why not mix water work and breath work, right? I can hold my breath for a long time.
Yeah.
Wim has all these records supposedly of swimming underneath ice. It just seems like a natural connection for people to make. And the thing is that when I asked that question, how many people have died, I just started finding more and more and more cases of deaths. And I feel somewhat responsible from the context that I have been one of Wim's, you know, primary, you know, proponents for so long. And, you know, the way I got into him is I went into him saying he's not going to be a cult leader, right? Like, Wim has got something good. He's not a cult leader. And now I'm seeing him act increasingly erratic, and I'm finding cases of people dying, and people are reaching out to me saying that they know people who have died doing his method. And most of it stems from hyperventilating in water, passing out, and drowning. And you know, the Wim Hof method has these warnings on their website saying don't hyperventilate in water because you might drown. So those are there. But the thing is that Wim in person is still teaching that particular technique and selling that on a $99 course on his website. And he's been selling it for, I would say 8 years at least.
So
I have been raising alarm bells.
Because I remember one of the first times I actually got in touch with you was I had a client who had been doing Wim Hof. Then she went off and started doing, I've forgotten her name, one of the many LA like women breathing people who's making loads of money off basically doing the same. Although this woman said it was basically like Wim Hof on steroids. It was just like longer, harder, stronger, etc. But she got tinnitus. And then at the round, it was a little bit before you then came out of your video about tinnitus and Wim Hof and the increasing amount of people who had got in touch with you, or you put something on Twitter, I think. And that was like one of the first bits and pieces. And for me, I've never really been a Wim Hof practitioner. When I was really into yoga, I would do some, which is essentially the same thing, sort of some Bastrika breathing and some Kapalabhati and like some of these other similar but slightly different pranayamas. But it's never really sat with me. I've just never felt it suited me, if you like. I kind of do long breath holds in the other side of things. And, but yeah, so obviously that was a while ago now. That was, well, probably over a year ago, I reckon you put that one up there. But it was kind of interesting because, as you said, you've been one of Wim's main proponents. And realistically, you were probably the guy who actually helped legitimize and make him who he is today to a certain degree.
Right.
And so it's really, for me, it's really interesting that obviously, you know, you've got a little documentary just come out, an hour about this, which I've now seen. And you said about how you kind of maybe your investigative journalism maybe happened like too early. And actually,
right.
You know, and one of the things I was kind of looking around this was like how maybe that guru sides of things, the danger side, really has to come with fame, has to come with like
fame is a drug. It's so isolating for people. You know, once you get very famous, people start, you know, you have all these followers on Twitter, right? That's how we get famous now. We have social media fame, right? But you get put on this pedestal where you know, all you get all of this affirmation for what you do, and the more extreme things you do get even more affirmation. And for someone like Wim, he's best when he's humble. Right. He's best when there's sort of a challenge against him, and he is, you know, in it, and he's fully present in the moment. And what has happened is, as he has grown more and more famous, he has gotten more and more erratic. Like, if you look at his, like, maybe his Twitter feed is very cultivated. It's from sort of the organization. But if you speak to him, he's talking about, like, COVID conspiracies, Anthony Fauci, you know, Anum, who is his son, you know, look at his Twitter feed. It's all about, like, why the war in Ukraine, why Russia is right in the war in Ukraine. I mean, they've really taken this tact, which is very sort of salacious and conspiracy theory forward. And I think that's very easy to do when everyone, you know, he's sort of famous for proving that he had this idea about science and then proving the scientist wrong.
Yep.
Although he didn't prove them wrong. He proved them, the scientist proved him right.
Yes.
And now he thinks that everything he does is right. And when your philosophy is pushed beyond perceived limits, which is the subtitle of one of his books.
Yeah.
And you have millions of people following your example. But then when you push past perceived limits, some people are going to die.
Yes.
And there's multiple types of like, I think the most egregious are these people who have died, right? That's like, you know, they're following his example, you know, they hyperventilate water, they pass out. And that's a real problem, but it's other things too. Like, you know, when I was writing What Doesn't Kill Us, I stand by almost everything I wrote in that book, but there are things that I didn't write in that book that I wish I had.
Yeah.
Because I think it's important to show the full dimensions of this man, because people just keep on sort of saying he's perfect without realizing there are some serious problems with him.
It's from your perspective, looking at that, and I'm maybe like just straw manning, but like at the time he was still like, you know, what was it, like three people on the course that you did or four people on the course that you did? And,
three.
You know, you kind of would have had no idea to a certain degree that actually you writing that Playboy article was going to suddenly, you know, potentially help Wim Hof be as big as he is. And actually, if it had been that, you know, 25 people went and kind of did Wim's courses over there, and he was still like he was then, he might not be the kind of guru-y type figure he currently has kind of fallen into, I guess. But as you were saying about fame and, you know, that kind of isolation-y type thing, I kind of feel that when you get to that, you end up surrounding yourselves with the people who, you know, work for you again, or, you know, work well with. And, you know, he, one of the big things I see is his biggest proponent these days is definitely Russell Brand.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm not against Russell Brand. I think Russell Brand has got some, you know, some nice ideas around spirituality to a certain degree and sort of trying to more of love and whatever else. But at the same time, he also talks a lot of those conspiracy type things that Wim does. And, you know, I have no idea how many followers Russell Brand has these days, but I see him quite often. And he is, like you said, like Wim is doing water and hyperventilation, which maybe we'll come to in just a minute as to why it's dangerous. But, you know, I was quickly flicking through Russell Brand's Instagram feed tonight just to find it. But I found a video of someone saying, how do you stay focused? And he says, oh, you know, you have to find your breath before you jump in. And so then he says, I do it like this. And he's literally stood there hyperventilating, jumping into an ice tub, and he's hyperventilating sitting in the ice tub.
Can you send me a link to that video?
I've got it here. Let me just quickly bring it up, because we'll stick it on here and I'll send it over to you as well. Because I think it's pretty interesting. If, like, let me just put the sound on. Don't know how we start this again. Hang on. Let's just quickly do that. Sorry.
Look, it's a little tidy whities. Find his underwear hilarious. Got one of the devices. places. Can you undo the sound so I can hear what he's doing? Yeah. Yeah, I can't tell if he's hyperventilating or not. It looks like he might be, which is very much a bastardization of, well, it's very much what Wim has been teaching. But yeah, if you hyperventilate in water, you blow off your CO2. And then if you hold your breath in that water, you might pass out. Like, yeah. It happens. And that's really quite shocking to me. Actually, I'd never seen that footage.
It was literally like 2 weeks ago or something. It got posted and I was watching it. And there's a lot of people who have commented saying, you shouldn't really be hyperventilating before you get into water. But there's lots of people, lots and lots and lots of people saying, oh my God, this is amazing, blah, 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 blah. So,
right. Well, this is exactly an example of the issue that I'm talking about. Now, some people know the dangers. Wim is aware of the dangers. But when you ask him, like, why are you still teaching this? He says, well, are you, you know, think of all the people I've saved. You know, and are you going to blame me for everyone who drowns? And like, no, you're not responsible for everyone who drowns, but you are responsible for teaching a technique that can lead to people drowning.
Yeah.
And you know better. Like, you have warnings on your website saying against it. So you have foreknowledge of what it is that you're doing. And I think with people like Brand and Hoff, you know, when you get very famous, you believe your own shit.
Yes.
Yeah, and there's no peers anymore to be like, no, maybe you're making an error. Mm-hmm. And because Wim doesn't need peers anymore. He has money and fame and all that stuff. And now that the peers he seeks out are people like Russell Brand, who are just other yes men to his yes man. And then Wim starts adopting the more extreme notions that come from Brand. And, you know, it's a problem in society at large, to be fair. Like, a lot of people who get famous believe their own shit and get isolated. That's what I wrote about in my book, The Enlightenment Trap, right? Mm-hmm. These gurus who come up and they usually start off with great insights in the world. They can really help the world. And there's really beautiful things about even the most corrupt gurus out there, because there's a reason why the followers seek them out.
Start in the first place, yeah.
And then, you know, you can have like 95% of your teachings awesome and 5% is messed up. And when you have millions of followers, that's a lot of problems.
Yes. Yeah. And I think, I mean, like you say, kind of, you look at someone like Osho and the Wild Wild Country documentary type thing. And, you know, most people, certainly when I was traveling through India, Osho schools of meditation all over the shop. And then you kind of, you see the program. And clearly the guy had some great insights into life and into like all sorts. But at the same time, like when you suddenly start getting that many Rolls Royces and that many Rolexes, everything suddenly starts to become a little bit different. And, you know, it's kind of crazy that Wim's kind of going more and more to the crazy. Well, not that he wasn't crazy, but I guess the crazy just amplifies.
Yeah, it's become, you know, I've often said that Wim is a prophet and a madman, right? And he's a prophet in the sense that he opened the door for millions of people, including myself, to these techniques, which have been very beneficial.
Yes.
He's a madman. And that was, you know, he has done many crazy things that have been dangerous and, you know, potentially fatal to him. And one of the reasons that I liked Wim initially is that if you knew him at all, you would think to yourself, I don't want to be this guy, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to be Wim. I want to be me, and I want to take something from Wim and go about my life. But the problem is now, like, you see photos on his like social media with everyone like holding him and touching him and blessing him. You have people who follow him around like he is this sort of special human. And, you know, we're all special. But like, he's not
special.
A god, right?
Yes.
He's not linked to the tether of the universe. He's a guy with some really cool insights that we can appreciate, and we should, you know, take that for what it's worth, but we shouldn't lose our sense and reason and follow him blindly. And, or just follow, even worse, the social media image that comes up about him, and which almost bears no bearing on who he is as a person. Like, he's, you know, when you meet him, usually, I, like, I'm not a psychiatrist. I can't give a real medical diagnosis here, but like, he's a guy who has lots of highs and lows, mm-hmm. right? His highs are very high and he's very fun to be around when he has his highs on, and his lows are really, really bad. This is my experience from hanging out with him. He has a history of alcoholism. He was a smoker for many years. One of the things that I left out of two of the things, stories that I left out of my book that I have now recounted in my YouTube video.
Yeah.
One was that he abandoned his children for 10 years.
Yeah, that was really interesting, that one. Yeah.
I mean, you know, his first wife died. Olaya committed suicide and he had four children. Then he shacked up with another lady and left his kids to live in a squat house and didn't see them for 10 years, as he had another kid in, I believe he was in Rotterdam. Mm-hmm. He might've been The Hague, but he was in another Dutch city. And he never saw his kids. So Anum, who was his eldest, was raising all the other kids, basically homeless in a squat house with very little support whatsoever. And then when that marriage, when Wim's second marriage sort of breaks up, he comes back to his children in debt, $30,000 in debt, which for him, that was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, his oldest son, Anum, got back together with him because he saw, as he says, an opportunity, because his father was getting quite famous and they could build a business together. It wasn't because, you know, thanks
missed
dad
him
for abandoning
and he loved
me
him
for 10 years. You know, who wants to love that dad, right?
Yeah.
And so that was one issue, but it also connected to this moment, which is, I think some people have heard this story before, but like, he hadn't seen his son, Michael, who is the fourth of his children, in 10 years. And he wanted to meet him. And so he said, let's go meet at Vondel Park in Amsterdam, which is a park with a nice big fountain in the middle of it. And Wim gets there early and he hasn't seen him. And he feels guilty for not seeing him. So he does a Wim thing. He goes out and swims in the middle of the fountain. And he gives himself an enema by sitting on the fountainhead, and the fountain the power of that water is so strong that it cuts through all of his intestines like a knife, and he is dying. And then his son shows up and he paddles to the wall and says, Michael, take me to the hospital, I'm dying. And there's, you know, blood and feces coming out of his ass. And, you know, when you talk to him about this, the first thing he'll say is, oh, you know, they changed the nozzle on the fountain. I used to do this all the time. I've done this 100 times, but they changed the nozzle and that's why it happened. But like, well, that's quite a coincidence that you would almost kill yourself on the day that you're meeting your son for the first time. There are other psychological things going on here. And, you know, when I followed up with him, and I actually had a recording of this conversation from 2013 with him, he was like, yeah, you know, maybe you get this idea that you want to kill yourself, that you want to die doing this because he feels so bad, you know? So he's like sort of making a physical act of contrition to his son, which is all well and good, but this is the guy that people are putting their lives, you know, in his hands.
Absolutely.
Like, these are the sorts of decisions that he makes. And so that when you start following him up a mountain without your shirt on, or when if you decide to go swimming under an ice cap,
yeah,
you're following Wim the prophet and the madman.
Yeah.
People are dying.
So from, like, I mean, I don't know whether or not this is, I mean, this is kind of mostly my observation, and I kind of had heard like some rumbling stuff. I don't know. I think like when you look at Wim sort of when in the book and those early things, when you see him and in the video that you have put out, there's like obviously photos and clips and bit of him much younger, sort of 10 years ago. And he looked relatively healthy then. And this is one of the things that gets me now, is when you look at him now, he looks more and more, and I don't know, I'm probably slanderous or something, but like he looks more and more like an alcoholic now than he did. Even, you know, he's got the nose of like an alcoholic, as you point out, he's got the big ruddy red nose. But like just the general state of him, and I don't know, you know, fame's a motherfucker, let's face it, but like being isolated and stuff. And it's kind of, it's almost, I've kind of didn't know whether or not the more erratic and almost blasé, I know he's not necessarily blasé, but like a little bit, whether that's to do with like
I don't know, more drink and whatever. So he just looks more like the kind of guy who sits in a bar and you kind of don't necessarily want to talk to, rather than like who he was 10 years ago.
Yeah, I think there's a couple. I think fame is a bitch for sure. I think that he feels very isolated for a number of reasons. He may be drinking again. I don't know for sure, but he has certainly a history of alcoholism. And if you look at him, if you look at his most recent videos, you know, one, the dude is in his 60s, mid 60s. Yeah. So that's
and he's had a hard life. He's had a hard life.
Yeah. So that's, you know, I don't want to like make fun of him because he's not aging super well, but I will say that if you look at YouTube videos talking about him, you know, he'll show up as some influencer and people will still look at him as if he is not the physical presentation that's in front of him, but their ideal of him. Yes. I was watching this one video a few days ago. I was like, oh, you know, you can't do what Wim does because Wim is an extreme athlete. He has got these abilities. And you look at him like, no, he doesn't actually. Mm. He's a guy. He doesn't hold the world record for pretty much anything anymore. You know, definitely not the world's longest ice bath, which is now 3 hours. I think he topped out at 1 hour and 50 minutes or something. You know, still impressive, but like he's not actually at the top of anything from a physical perspective, but people say that he is. You know, he climbed up Mount Everest in his shorts. Well, no, he tried to climb up Mount Everest in his shorts. Those are two very different things, and he got frostbite when he did it. So it's like this image that we have created of a Superman because he has got great social media team behind him. That you know is run by Anam Hoff, who's his son, and they have a really like strong brand identity. But now people are looking at that brand identity and pretending it's a real thing, and it's not.
Yeah, and I think that's maybe one of the problems is like the perception of extreme athlete versus what he actually is now. Again, like you've kind of pointed out, is that's what is kind of slightly dangerous, is because people are projecting the idea of this extreme athlete and that they can maybe go and do super extreme things because that's what Wim does. And actually he doesn't, can't, slash whatever these Never days.
Right? Like, exactly. You know, yeah. Take for instance, his 22 or 26 world records, right? So he is often presented as a guy who has a lot of records, but if you actually try to fact check and look at what records he has or what that even is, like only one is in Guinness, right? He has a record for a barefoot half marathon in north of the Arctic Circle, which, you know, that's somewhat impressive.
Yeah.
3 hours, that time is not impressive, but it's, you know, better than everyone else ever tried, right?
Yeah.
But he claims another 21 to 25 records, depending on when you're talking to him. And I did this dive. I did this on Reddit. You know, I asked the question on Reddit. I was like, oh, can people help me find his records? And there aren't really any, right? They're certainly not registered anywhere. It's just something that Wim says, oh, I'm going to do a record, which is what he did with me on Kilimanjaro. He was like, we're going to get a record for going up whatever. And he had an idea in his mind that it was like we had to beat 30 hours. That was going to be his record. But there was no record. Right. There was nothing like the fastest ascent of Kilimanjaro is like 4 hours or something like that. It wasn't that. And he's like, no, but it's a group ascent, or no, it's a blah, blah, blah. And like people just give it a pass.
Yeah.
But you know, as a journalist, reality freaking matters. And when we create false ideas, then that undermines in many ways, the benefit. And so I get a lot of people like very angry at me right now. Yeah. Like a lot of people are very angry at me because they're like, Scott, you used to love Hoff and now you're hurting him. And think of all the good he has done in the world. And my response to that is I have been his number one proponent for 10 years. And I love his method and he has done a lot of good in the world, but that doesn't mean he's Jesus.
Yes. You know, it doesn't he's not infallible.
Right. And you know, and in fact, in a recent text conversation that I had with him, and it's in the video, he calls himself Jesus. So, like, you know, we need to drop Wim the guru and just accept that some of these practices can be beneficial and go onwards, maybe without him.
And that's the thing about the practice. And this is what his whole
you know, with you at the beginning, and even with all of the investigations when he went into The Hague or wherever it was that he started having all the medical tests done, like the whole purpose of those was that he wasn't special and that he could train people to do it in 4 weeks or whatever it was. So it's strange to a certain degree that it's kind of, I guess that is the nature of these things, but that it's kind of begun to roll reverse, and actually he is now the special one, and whilst you can do the practice that he does, actually he is above head and tails above you,
right? And he's not. That's the other thing, like, and he's not
exactly,
and he you know, he is impressive, he's done impressive things. I don't want to undermine his actual achievements, but the fact that so many people want to be in his proximity, and it's like, you know, you go on these winter travel expeditions and you hang out with him and he sings songs on his guitar, the same song he's been playing for 10 years literally on his guitar, and then you go jump off a waterfall with him and your 100 best friends, and it's all like sort of this carnival thing. Hey, and if it's fun, it's fun, that's fine, you know, there's nothing wrong with fun. But it's that next step, which is a problem. He's not a thought leader. He doesn't understand the physiology very well.
That's one of the things I wanted to bring up, because in the documentary that you put out, like, you've got Brian McKenzie on there, who's obviously been on here, and like, but he, you know, he points out at one point, he was just like, there is no one in that institution, business, whatever it is, in a fire, who understands the physiology.
Correct.
And that's probably the scariest thing, because as someone who, I'm a nurse, my life has been anatomy and physiology. My life as a breathing coach and a movement coach is all about anatomy and physiology. And I've had to deal with numerous people who probably weren't suited to do the Wim Hof method when they did it, and have like blown themselves out essentially. And then it's trying to get them back to a comfortable place, but not understanding the physiology as a company. And, you know, I think Wim's always been fairly loose with, you know, the whole time he's kind of like, you know, it's science, it's, you know, it's, you know, your pH of the blood is doing this, and it, yeah, I don't know, it's kind of strange that in 2023 they haven't, as a big company, got some kind of physiologist in to go, right, can we sort out what it is and what it isn't, and then we can do this.
Well, that's because there are many people who are Wim Hof method instructors who understand the physiology. In fact, it's said in those communities frequently that Wim is the worst Wim Hof method instructor of all of them. And I would say in general, that has been my experience, is looking at the people who have been trained, they work hard to try to do safe practices.
Yep.
And they, you know, try to establish, you know, often do they come with physiological background and they understand this, and there's our discussion, and people are like, oh, you know, Wim says, you know, you're getting more oxygen in your blood than you can, but we know that's not true. And then they sort of correct it. And I would say that has been a fail safe that has been very, very good.
Yeah.
In that community, but it doesn't help when your leader says other things, when he is on a totally different train than where the movement is at, the movement as in like the number of people is actually going.
Yeah.
And yet he is the way that the thing that attracts people, because he has got this big personality and he's a nice guy.
He's charismatic as fuck. Do you mean like he is like a super charismatic guy?
Right. But the charisma is not reliable. And you know, we forgive him over and over again. Like, he'll say something that is just wrong, or a lie, or, you know, just out there. And then people are like, oh, it's just Wim being Wim. The truth is, and then we fix what he says to his benefit, but we don't give that benefit to other people. Like, if you know, I did a video recently about a cover-up done by the Wim Hof method people where they
bring that up. Yeah.
We documented the lie that he did. And people have been very upset that I didn't mention the correct brand of crampons people may or may not have been wearing on the ascent. And the thing is, it doesn't, like, it's an irrelevant detail that maybe I made a mistake, maybe I didn't make, that was very loud. You know, maybe I made a mistake, maybe I didn't make a mistake, but it was for such a minor thing. But people are raking me over the coals. They're like, well, Scott's not a journalist. He doesn't check all his facts. And like, okay, I should. There's a reason to correct the record, and I'm fine with that. But they give Wim, who can say just about anything, because he's famous, because he's got charisma, because we want to believe that there's a man out there who understands physiology better than science does.
Yeah.
Because we want that, he gets this free pass, and that free pass creates danger.
Yes, definitely. And what I was wondering, because as I say, I've been following you on Insta and YouTube for a while, and for me, what's interesting is like the what seems to be the dynamic within Inner Fire as far as like how a lot of this stuff maybe is dealt with publicly and people are held to not held to account and stuff. And Anum, his son, who seems to run the business,
yes,
or run Inner Fire, you had him, he basically said that one of your videos, I can't remember which one it was like wrong or something, had one of your videos taken down. I think it got put back up, and you had a conversation with Wim, and I think you posted the audio of it, which I found quite interesting, because he was basically saying in that, which I think you've put it in the video a little bit as well, but he was saying, you know, Anum needs to like step down, he needs to back up, he needs to like. And so at the time, and again, when I watched that one, it felt to me like there was a, I don't know, a split within Inner Fire, within Wim Hof or whatever. I don't know if it was the case or not, but it felt like our Wim actually felt like this, but the company's doing this. And I, maybe at the time, I didn't know a huge amount about it, but that Wim, I thought that Wim was like overarching. He's like he gets overall control and say of everything. I don't know if that's really the case or not, but it kind of felt.
It's not at all. And in fact, this is one of the, it's sort of like the inside baseball, like the too much information for a lot of your audience, because you only care about the method mostly, but the organization is actually owned by his son, who's named Anum Hof, who actually, you know, at that sort of fateful meeting, you know, 10-ish years ago, a little bit more than 10 years ago, he created the business and incorporated the business and has 100% ownership of it. And right. Wim has just been an employee who draws a salary from this thing that has his name. But, you know, Anum has said many times, I can just fire my dad, I can fire my sisters. You know, it's a family business, but it's like definitely this.
It's definitely his.
Definitely his. And now Anum has now said to me that he's sharing ownership with his family. And he sent me many emails saying that I'm wrong, that I'm reporting inaccurate information. But if you actually look at the Dutch Chamber of Commerce and pull the corporate records, everything traces to Anum. So if there's a private deal out there, I don't know what it is. And
yeah, it's not official in the books.
It's not official in the books to any way that I've been able to verify. And the thing is, when Anum says, you know, my dad was getting a lot of attention and we're going to do a business, it's clear that he is all about the business. He doesn't practice the method.
He
polices the method. He has all these legal contracts that people sign and he controls everything. And when I put up a video, you know, this was a video and I think it came out in January, where I was talking about the corporate structure of Inner Fire. You know, it was taken down almost immediately, not because I said anything inaccurate, but he's hit me with all these false copyright claims through YouTube's terms of service system and threatened to sue me and hit me with trademark. Like he hired a lawyer to go hit me with a trademark complaint or something.
Yeah.
And I lawyered up and I went through all of the motions and it all vanished at some point because he had no case.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was enough to make that video go nowhere. And so what he does is he uses these bullying tactics and he lies repeatedly to bolster the image of his father so that you don't say anything negative about him. And people are scared of Anum. Like if you go around the world and you talk to people who have been working with Inner Fire and you say, hey, what's your relationship with Anum like? they all cringe and get very upset. Or, you know, occasionally they'll like, I'll know some stuff that has happened, and they'll just like pretend nothing ever happened that was wrong at all, because they do not want to upset him, because that organization sort of works with the command and control structure not dissimilar to some cults, right? Not dissimilar to this sort of like soft power threatening thing. And I think that's one of the reasons why Wim Hof's image is the way it is, because people just don't want to fucking deal with Eno.
And that's quite interesting, because like you said, you know, this podcast is mostly about the physiology and stuff. But from my perspective, like, and this goes back to what you said in the video, in your video, of like, you're trying, you know, you feel like you actually want to save the method from,
yes,
let's say the man. But I, from my perspective, it's not just the man, because it's the man and the family and everything that goes with it. Because there's people who will see Wim Hof and they'll go and practice it, and they'll go, I want to go and be a Wim Hof instructor because it's fucking amazing and it's like been so good for me. But those people end up paying like a lot of money to go to Poland or wherever it is potentially, and well, I mean, pray, or what baptize with Wim. And I mean, that was in your video when I saw that, that was a slightly terrifying
right, when moment. You see that the baptism is a circle of 30 or 40 people, all with women in the center, and they're you know, arms deep in a icy pool of water, and Wim leads them through hyperventilation protocols where they do to, I think it's about 12 deep breaths. So really big, deep things where you get lightheaded, and then everyone submerges together in the water. And this is, and then when they're done, they all have this euphoric experience, and there's physiological reasons for that, but it is a dangerous practice to conflate breath work and water work. And Wim is doing this in a public form. And I don't think anyone's going to die in that video, but I do think that they'll get the idea that this is what we do.
Exactly.
And they'll tell other people that this is something that we do. And those people will tell her. And all of a sudden we're playing this game of telephone where at the end of the line is a guy who's crazy.
Yeah. And we know you've pointed out in the video, and we haven't even mentioned how many there are, but you know, especially towards the end of your video, you bring in the fact that it appears the numbers of people dying seem to be going up.
Up.
Which isn't what we want.
And I will also say this, and, you know, obviously it's very difficult to get a formal number for the number of deaths. And there's some questions in every death because the dead don't speak. Yep. So, you know, there could be some error in what I'm talking about here. So let's just acknowledge that there, I have limitations from what I can dig up. But I will say, of the cases that I have found, I think it's 9 are in the United States. So it's 14 cases. Is it 13? It's 13 or 14 cases. Almost all of them are in the United States. And of those, almost all of those are in California. Right. And when we think about the global nature of the Wim Hof movement, he's enormous in the UK, right? But mm-hmm. He's enormous all through Europe, obviously in Holland and whatnot. If we think that maybe Americans are not particularly prone to misunderstanding the method and doing this, I mean, maybe that's a theory. Maybe Americans are more likely to hyperventilate in water than someone else. I don't know.
And Californians.
Yeah, maybe Californians are particularly crazy. Could be. But assuming that my data sample is not too skewed, I'm going to wager that there's going to be a lot more cases that never made the media, that I never discovered. I'm an American journalist who's based in the American West. And maybe there's what I think may happen is that after this podcast comes out, my stuff drops, people are going to start contacting me and saying, oh yeah, this other person too. Because when I started the reporting, there were 9 cases and I ended at 13 when I went to publish, and people just keep on reaching out.
I mean, in that video, in your video, it's kind of, well, it's heartbreaking and painful to watch the girlfriend's brother's partners, well, and one of them very fortunately himself, who didn't die but was on 4 weeks of ECMO in ITU, and you know, the brother I think there was a video of his brother in the pool, and he stood there and he was telling the story about how basically he was found in a meditative position under the water, mm-hmm. and he'd been under there for like 20 minutes or something. I think it was that one. I can't remember quite which one
or so, but yeah, it's, I mean,
you know, they got him out and started doing CPR, got his heart rate, got his heart beating, but he was brain dead. And, you know, and it, I think the thing about this is it's really fucking easy to stop this at the end of the day. It should be so easy. And in one of the clips, Anum said about one of the deaths that it was lame and that they put stuff on their website so we can't do anything else. But that's kind of bollocks, really, because really, front and center, it should just be like, right, go do your ice water, go do your breathing, and there's like a hard wall where nothing goes through the middle of it.
Yeah. Like, what's the point of doing it? The thing is, it's not like if you hyperventilate in water and you're able to hold your breath underwater, you have any physiological benefit. There's no autoimmune benefit or anxiety for doing this. It's just like a feat. Hey, look, you can impress your friends sort of thing. And that is stupid. It's like, why are we trying to perform a stunt that can kill us? Like, oh yeah, I can bungee jump with, you know, with a really relaxed bungee cable. Like, okay, well that, you know.
Congratulations.
Oh, why are we doing that, right? And you know, as Laird Hamilton said, you know, if you keep on doing this, it's like playing roulette, and eventually it's almost inevitable that this bad thing is going to happen and that you're going to have a bad consequence. So why teach that to millions of people? And I think the reason is that Wim doesn't realize how dangerous fame really is. And he, you know, it's the Spider-Man sentence, right? With great power comes great responsibility. And Wim basically wants to abdicate responsibility, but he wants the fame, and you don't get to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're kind of pushing on for an hour already, which is mental. In your documentary, you chatted to Otto Muzik. I wanted to kind of bring that up because I feel like that was, you know, one of the big selling points for Wim Hof. And don't get me wrong, while it's not my practice, I know it's been yours, and I know a lot of people who have used it and had amazing effects. But it's not as and in the same way that Wim Hof is not special, essentially the practice of Wim Hof is also not special.
Right. Yeah. So what Otto is so amazing with, so he is known in the Wim Hof method community as a guy who studied Wim Hof in an MRI machine, ice immersion. He basically said, Wim is able to control physiological responses through essentially the same pathways that are the placebo response. And when you talk to Otto, when you talk to Inner Fire, they're like, look, this proves the Wim Hof method is essentially magical. Like, oh my God, it does all this stuff, right? And what Otto is actually saying is, no, it's just a very easy thing to test. And just about any mind-body practice where you have an anticipated effect, response, you can strengthen yourself, and it's not the Wim Hof method. And now Otto is also saying that he doesn't want to have anything to do with Wim Hof anymore because it's all about the business. It's all about the money now.
Yeah.
And I think he does not, I think he feels maybe slightly uncomfortable with the way his science has been totemized by this community. Because if you look in the broader world of like wellness, one of the things which does make Wim special is that he's had scientists study him, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that is a great indication that there's something special here, which is good. On the other side of that, though, is that, well, other people weren't studied and maybe they would have had similar responses too. And so it sort of sets Wim apart from every wellness practice out there because he is science. He's not totally science. Like, he's done some tricks and he doesn't even understand why it works.
Yeah. And I said, and that again leads back into the ego, which then leads back into the guru side of things, because I've been tested and actually I have been validated to be like special. And again, it goes back to the thing I find maybe the most frustrating, and is the fact that when you maybe started it, but through, you know, to when I think I probably was aware of Wim Hof around 14, 15, I reckon I started hearing about it more. Probably end of 15, 16, I actually heard, I think I got your book. When did your book come out?
2017 it came out.
So I got your book the year that came out. Mm-hmm. But around that time, it was not special to do this thing. It was literally anybody can do this, and there is no ego to it. But I've had numerous bloody arguments with people online who are, and this is, to me, this is the problem where people get so defensive about him and the method that they cannot fathom the fact that maybe he's wrong, or the method might not be perfect or suitable for every single person, you know. And it's the same with any breeding technique. Like Brian McKenzie has always said that him and Andrew Huberman can do the same breeding thing. It upregulates one of them, it downregulates the other. The thing that upregulates this guy downregulates this guy, and vice versa. And so for me, the thing that I get so frustrated about the Wim Hof method, and I'm probably one of the people who ends up being anti-Wim Hof method, not because of what it is, because actually, like you've pointed out, there is a place for hyperventilation, and it can be really useful and helpful for many people. There's definitely a place for ice baths and all that kind of stuff. Also really helpful. But the thing that's always, or has frustrated more and more over the time being in the breeding world, is how closed-minded the Wim Hof method people are. And that to me is just scary, because if you're that closed-minded, then as has happened again when I've been talking to people, the idea of passing out whilst doing the technique on a regular basis isn't a big problem, which if you're sitting on the floor, lying on the floor, yes, I get it, you're not going to hurt yourself. But going to the point of fainting and passing out regularly on a weekly basis, for one, from my perspective, you're just not learning anything about yourself. But it's just really dumb to be passing out that often. Your brain's not supposed to.
I don't know too many people who do that regularly who aim to pass out, but maybe you do.
Well, I just ended up having Instagram arguments with two or three people over the last 4 years who basically went, oh, you know, I've passed out, I went for a phase of just passing out every week because trying to push my number. I was trying to beat my number. I was trying to get more time.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's actually another issue here, is that and I don't think this is actually coming from Wim. I think this is actually more coming from the organization. It's that with the method, they want you to get their app, and they want you to compare your app numbers to push your breath holds and get, you know, push your limits and get stronger and all that stuff. And the thing is that it becomes a device which is wagging the dog. You're sitting there, you're not paying attention to your sensations. You're like, oh, I can hold it a little longer. You know, I'm going to get my PR or whatever it is that they're thinking. And that is silly. And it's not coming from him. It's coming from the fact that we want to monetize it. We want to share that. We want to compete other people, which is really not good, because I've spent half an hour in an ice bath. I never recommend to anybody they do that because it was dumb, right? But I did it, right? So I can, but you know, what's the point? And I think that people need to have more humility with that and realize this is something you're doing for yourself and not doing for other people.
For Instagram.
Yeah, or for Instagram or for anything else. And also I think that Wim has this, because many people found breath work through Wim, right? He's sort of one of these big faces of it. He almost never claims that he learned anything from anyone else. Mm-hmm. He says he's the progenitor and the creator of this method. But as you mentioned, it's just like Bastrika Pranayama. It's just like Kumbhaka Pranayama. It's very slight variations on these yogic techniques that have been around for a long time. He didn't invent ice baths, right? That goes back to the Stoics, but even more recently, there was a guy named Porfiry Ivanov who popularized ice baths throughout all of Europe. He died in 1983 after saying it cured cancer. Wim said similar things, right? Nietzsche was a big ice bather. It's a thing that has been in the European zeitgeist for a long time, and to some degree, the American zeitgeist. But somehow Wim has captured it. Somehow Wim think people, it's sort of like with teenagers who, you know, they start having sex the first time. Like, hey, oh my God, no, you older people don't understand sex. We understand it because we're living it. Dude, everyone everyone has done the sex and we all fucking loved it. And we've all been there. Like, you know, it's just sort of ignoring the history of what's actually going on.
we have all done the sex. And I think, again, I don't know, you just mentioned there, and it takes me back to some of the Indian guru-y type people who I heard about and stuff, and just how their thing was called was curing HIV, curing AIDS, curing cancer. And I remember traveling around India and seeing all these signs for this person saying, and I was just kind of like, God, surely people don't buy this. But I guess if you're that, when you become that charismatic and that followed, and people literally follow you to touch your head, and the chances are that you might stop your cancer treatment to.
Right. Yeah. And I think that Wim has been loose with that language in the past. He's not as bad as he could have been, because I think there's a lot of people trying to rein him in on that. But he really wants to say it, right? He really, really wants to, right? He really, like, and he believes it. And to some degree, I think there is an argument to be made that these things are useful in addition to whatever your medical treatments you're taking care of. And as a preventative thing before you get your diagnosis, right? And there are also problems with medical diagnosis. So it's not to say that the system isn't complex and, you know, 100%. Fraught in a number of ways. But there is that danger that someone ignores their doctor's advice ill-advisedly and tries to do the Wim Hof method for something that's not applicable for. And I don't know exactly where to make that distinction. It's actually a really hard and personal thing for people to make, but I don't think Wim makes it like it almost is like when you're listening to him that if you get sick, you failed, right? If you look at like Rangan Chatterjee's podcast with him, you know, do this and you'll never get sick again. Right. And that's what Wim Hof's, that was one of the titles of one of the things Rangan did. And well, what if you get sick?
Yeah.
What have you done? Have you messed up? And you know, there was a person who was a Wim Hof instructor who was in Poland, a few years ago, who was saying like some guy, you know, had a really stuffed up nose he was getting his instructor certification. He's like, I'm just really congested. I need to get cold medicine. And he was like shamed by the community because, well, you know, you shouldn't be getting a cold because you're doing the Wim Hof method. It's like, well, fuck you. I have a cold and I want to use my medicine that works. Like, you know, and there is this sense that, you know, you haven't believed hard enough, right?
Yes.
You haven't thought you breathed your cancer away good enough yet. And it's your fault.
Yeah.
And I think that Wim has enabled some of that conversation to occur because people look at Wim and somehow think that he's a paragon of health. And that's insane because he's
mental. Don't get me wrong. I'm fully aware that like when you see the ripped, huge six-pack abs, like people see that and think that's the paragon of health. And it's also not, let's face it, most of those people can't move for shit and they like hurt all the time and whatever else. But you should definitely be able to look at Wim Hof and think, you don't look that healthy. You look like the guy at the bar I don't really want to be talking to.
Right. And, you know, and in a way that was part of his charm when we first met him. It's like, because he defies expectations, right? So then you become used to defying expectations.
Yeah.
And now you're following the homeless guy up the mountain. And I just want people to like think rationally about him. Like,
and I think that coming from you is important though. I think the fact that you're doing this is what's actually so important.
Yes. I think that I'm the only person probably on earth who can put all of these pieces together in a credible way because I saw him at the beginning. I mean, although in my video, I also interviewed Marcel Hof, who's his brother.
Yeah.
So I think he also a very long-term view on the Hofs, but you know, having that breadth of experience is very, very important because I didn't get in on the level of where everything was super controlled the way it is now. I have seen the man. And I also know that if I don't get this message out right now and Wim dies and he's going to die, you know, in between 1 and 50 years from now, he's going to be dead.
Yeah.
And that company is going to want him to, they're going to want to monetize Jesus, right?
Yes.
And they're going to make him Jesus, and they're going to make him bigger and more important and more betterer and blow up that idea. And, you know, I did a podcast about this recently, and, you know, Scott Carney Investigates is my podcast, the show was The Monk Who Fucked Everything, about the history of like miracles going in Buddhism going back 2,800 years. Yeah. And, you know, you once your living person is dead, you start building that myth. And yeah, I want to be sure that future generations know that there was a contemporary writer,
yeah,
watching Wim and was aware that there were problems.
And the fact that it's you, and, you know, I won't say you drank the Kool-Aid, but essentially, or made the Kool-Aid potentially, but the fact that you were the one who, you've not only were you the one who helped launch him, let's say, because it was your first article, which then helped with a Vice went and saw him, and everything went Joe Rogan, everything came after you had kind of said, actually, he's not, what he does is, you know, what he does is spot on, it works. But the fact that you've not only done that, you've actually done it for 10 years. So yes, it's not like you did it and then you stopped.
Right.
So as you said, you're trying to save the method from the man and what sounds like the company as well. But like the fact that you did that and now you're the person who's saying, well, like, whilst the book still holds up, there's stuff that needs to be,
yeah,
we need to put more into this, because actually there is stuff that needs to be known. I think that's awesome, the fact that you're the person who is doing this.
Yeah, thank you. And I think it's important that people are having these conversations, because, and to be honest, it's really hard to go out there and talk about this with the larger community, because people, we all want the indomitable Iceman, right? We want Jesus, right? Everyone wants that figure who defies logic and who we can put our faith in. And the problem is there's no person on earth that we can put our faith in totally.
Yeah.
And we can't give up our own self-control, our own logic. And it's going to be very hard, because there are people who actually by now they've probably tuned out of the podcast, but like there are people who will listen to these things and then just get very, very irrationally angry. We live in a society that gets very irrationally angry very quickly, because we would rather have our myths than facts. And yes, I think this is an uphill battle for all of us. And, you know, in many aspects of the society that we live in right now, the guardrails have come off. And it's not just the Wim Hof method, it's like lots of stuff. But this is my own little area that I can say
do something about
and know it inside and out, and I can do something about. But it's also part of a larger mission to be like, well, who are our heroes? And why are they our heroes? And like, I would say that just about anyone who is ridiculously famous is prone to having this sort of groupthink isolation mechanism going on. And hopefully they're not teaching you to hyperventilate in water.
Fingers crossed. Well, Scott, thank you so much, because I know you've got to go and do more of these today. So we've smashed out the hour, and I think this was probably one of the most important ones I've ever done, because, you know, 13, potentially more, who knows, people died because of a misunderstanding or whatever it might be, a kind of, yeah, seeing what Wim's done and just running with it or whatever. But I think the fact that you're doing this, you're highlighting this, the part, the podcast, whatever you want to call it, video documentary, is awesome, and everyone should go and check out. Obviously, it'll be in the show notes. Thank you again. I'm just going to give you a shout out for all your books, because I've basically worked through most of them now. The Vortex is still one of my favorites. It's such a great book.
Thank you for reading.
And The Enlightenment Trap, the new one, is like the new edition, is awesome too. Podcast is, what's it called?
Scott Carney Investigates. And it's on all the platforms. It's on YouTube. It's on Spotify, Apple, all those places. And I'd love you guys to tune in, because it's fun. It's fun for me to put together.
It's super cool. And as like you said, it's kind of a cool mix between like Hardcore Histories and Huberman Lab, which is like basically my main two podcasts. So it's awesome.
just in case anyone wants to watch the documentary but struggles to find it on YouTube, in case it gets taken down,
where will it be? So
where will it be?
You'll go to my website, scottcarney.com. There will be active mirrors put up on a blog post. There's also the trailer that I'm putting up, which should not be takedownable for a number of like reasons. And that trailer will have active mirrors listed down there below. But it will be on Spotify, Apple, Rumble. Rumble is a terrible platform, but it's really hard to take stuff down from it. So it'll be there.
Russell Brand's favorite platform.
Right. It will be all over the internet and you should go find it.
I will make sure I share it around, and I'll get all of my breeding people to share it around too. So, Scott, thank you so much, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you again.
Love it. All right. Well, take care, and hopefully we'll talk again under different circumstances.
Yeah, man, that'd be great.